Thanks to Curex for its longtime support of Another Mother Runner. Whether it's running, hiking, biking, court sports, golf, or even working, Curex insoles can help you live a healthy and active lifestyle. For 15% off, visit Curex.com and use code AMR15. Thanks to Fabric by Gerber Life for supporting our show. Fabric by Gerber Life was designed to help you get a high-quality, surprisingly affordable term life insurance policy in less than 10 minutes. Join the thousands of parents who trust Fabric to protect their family. Apply today in just minutes at meetfabric.com/AMR. Welcome to Another Mother Runner. This is Sarah Bowen Shea. I'm joined today by Liz Waterstrat. Hello, Liz.
Hi, Sarah.
Oh my goodness. So I have an update on a saga that you and I talked about on a previous episode. The update of my birthday card from my son who goes to school across the country in New Jersey.
Edge of my seat. Absolute edge of my seat here.
So to recap, in case you missed that episode, I definitely wanted a birthday card from my kids who are off at college in different cities. And so I laid the groundwork. Clarity is kindness. I specifically said, it's going to mean a lot to me if I get a birthday card from you. So John put it in the mail in mid-February. It did not show up by my birthday of March 4th. So I casually asked. He asked me, did you get your birthday card? No. And then he was like, well, I mailed it so long ago to, you know, turns out he didn't put a stamp on it. So thankfully, it did get returned. He got a voicemail from someone at his college saying, we have your letter here. Please come pick it up. And I actually went, or I didn't go. I did not go to New Jersey to get it myself, but I called the office because he had done a screenshot of the voicemail. And so it had the number on there. And I'm like, he's super busy with rehearsals. And I'll get to why that is in a second. I was like, I am not letting them hold on to it for like 3 or 4 days and then thinking like, oh, he's not coming to get it. Toss and recycling. So I called and they were like, no, we'll definitely keep it. So then it turns out that somehow he has lost all the stamps that I gave him at the beginning of the year. So on Sunday, which was Easter as we record this, he mentioned he still hadn't been able to find the stamps. He was getting picked up within a few hours of when we were talking by Marianne, who is a devoted mother runner, member of our community. She used to actually, she blogged on our website a long time ago about training for her first marathon with her best friend from college. And so she, her husband, and her teen daughter were picking John up at school to take him with them into the city, into New York City, to have brunch and then go see a matinee of the Broadway musical Back to the Future. Like, how incredibly nice is that, that she included him on an Easter celebration like that?
That is very, very nice.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I think it really speaks volumes about the entire Mother Runner community. So it really made my heart, you know, grow infinite sizes. So I know Marianne, she's a very thoughtful person. So I texted her and I'm like, can you please bring a stamp to John, a forever stamp to John so he can mail my birthday card?
Oh my gosh.
So she did. So I have not asked him, I've not hounded him to see if he has put it in the mail. But I did tell him to put it in the mail with enough time because I am headed out there on April 12th to see him. He is in Sophisticated Ladies, which is a very dance-forward show. And so I'm going out there for all 5 performances. So I was like, John, I really don't want the card to arrive while I'm in New Jersey. So,
Sarah. Sarah, two things.
Yes, okay.
At this point, you might as well just ask him to hold on to it until next year.
No.
For next year's birthday. He's considerate. He's already got the bulk of the work done. He just has like 360 more days to get it into the mail.
But he also he wrote a letter in it. So there's timeliness to it. You know, there's insight into his existence and his thought processes.
There could be, or it could just be like, hi, mom, miss you. See you soon. Love, John.
He wrote me one letter in the fall, and it was very detailed, and I reread it on occasion. Yeah. Aww. Okay, go. And
okay, well, but here's my second thought. Yes. My second thought is next year, get yourself a card. When he's home, have him write you the letter. And then just to keep like the element of mystery and suspense in it, put a stamp on it, mail it to yourself. And then all of this like drama and where in the world is Sarah Bowen Shea's birthday card? It, you know, you just won't have to spend the life energy on it. It'll just, you know where it is because you're the one who will have mailed it.
So anyway, our topic today, we're talking about if running can make you a moral person, which might sound a bit lofty or woo-woo. Our guest, Sabrina Little, has written a book about the subject called The Examined Run, and it's not just her musings. Oh no, Sabrina has serious chops in both the academic world and the running one. She has a PhD in philosophy, and she studied philosophy of religion at Yale Divinity School. Perhaps you've heard of it. She's an assistant professor in the Department of Leadership and American Studies at Christopher Newport University in Virginia. On the running side, she's a trail, road, and ultramarathon runner. Her career highlights are literally too numerous to list, but a few are that Sabrina is a five-time U.S. national champion. In 2013, she held both the 24-hour American record of 152.03 miles and the 200K American record of 19 hours and 30 minutes, while in 2019, she ran the fastest 100K and 50-mile times for women in the U.S. Woo! Oh my goodness. Sabrina is also a mother of two young daughters. Thanks for joining us, Sabrina. I'm really looking forward to our conversation.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to talk to you.
Sabrina, tell us a little bit about your athletic background.
Yeah, big question. So I was a professional trail and ultramarathon runner, I guess, for 7 or 8 years. But growing up, I played a mixture of sports. I played basketball and soccer at a pretty high level in those kind of elite development type teams. And the thing that I was always good at was the running. So heading into college, I was running at the College of William & Mary, and I kind of fell into trail and ultramarathoning by accident. After my freshman year of college, it was my mom's third year of being in remission from cancer. And so I decided to put together a fundraiser for the National Ovarian Cancer Coalition, and I ran 100 miles in my hometown.
Wow.
And I just thought it was like an idiosyncratic thing that I was doing. I didn't realize that there was a sport called ultramarathoning. So the next day it was in the newspaper and I had a lot of people reaching out and saying, did you know this was one of the top 100 mile times in the country this year? And I was like, other people do this? What? I mean, it actually worked out great. William & Mary is in Virginia, which has a really active trail and ultra scene. So I started just, you know, looking around at local races. I got plugged into a really great community here and I left track and cross country at that point. And I have regrets about, you know, not seeing that time through to completion because it is such a special time. But I just really felt called to try this new world that suited my competencies really well and enabled me to explore Virginia in ways that I couldn't when I was running, you know, 5 or 10 miles at a time.
Mm, yeah. You don't want to see the same track over and over, but you get out there on the trails.
Yes.
So how about philosophy? What sparked your interest there?
Yeah. So I've always been drawn to philosophy, but I didn't know it as philosophy for most of my life. Like, I had a really good humanities department in my high school, and we read things like Montesquieu and Machiavelli and Rousseau, even as freshmen. And we read some Plato, we read some of the Divine Comedy, and I just loved that, but I knew it as history and literature. And then in college, I went to study sciences. I thought I wanted to be a neuroscientist. I was really interested in the brain in high school, but I just had to take some philosophy classes as part of the core requirements, and I fell in love with it. I love being part of a tradition of inquiry where you're asking questions about what it means to be human, and they're questions that people have been asking for generations. I love that kind of continuity, seeing yourself as part of like a tradition of being human and wondering about the good life and things like that. So it pulled me in, and kind of like ultra running, It's like, you can't look back.
Mm. Wow. Lofty, lofty high school you went to there. I'm impressed. So the subtitle of your book is Why Good People Make Better Runners. Can you tease that out a bit for us?
Yeah, I think so. Full disclosure, when you have a when you work with a publisher, mm-hmm. they have a team of people deciding on the subtitle that best represents the content. Mm. And it's supposed to be a little bit provocative, right? Because probably as soon as you hear why good people make better runners, you're probably thinking of the person who's an egoist and is like shining at the top of whatever sport. And so people often ask me that, like, why is that the title? But yeah, the reason is this, like, there are certain virtues that obviously support our performances as distance runners. So things like perseverance or patience or courage, like on balance, if you're a more patient runner, then, like, you know, all other things held equal, you'll probably outperform someone who doesn't have that quality, mm. right? Or perseverance, right? Our sport is long suffering. It's remaining on task for a long period of time. So if you have that excellence, that virtue, you're going to perform better. And even some of the, what you would presume are vices that would support performing well, like in athletic spaces, oftentimes it wouldn't actually, like, and an example is pride, for example. Like, we think of pride as like having these big egos, that's something that would support your performance as a runner. But really, pride commits this error, which is to think too highly of itself. Mm. And you could imagine, you know, entering a race, thinking you can do way more than you actually can, and then crashing and burning, right? That kind of mm-hmm. situation we've all been in. And so, does pride really help you as a runner? I think more often than not, it probably doesn't. It's, mm. it's probably why there are so many humble, wonderful people in distance running. Mm. I think there are other vices that are potentially good candidates for like traits that might support performance, but also undermine a good life, like intransigence. If you'll hold on and you're stubbornly going to persist in things, I think, yeah, indeed, that trait probably helps you to get to more finish lines. I think probably envy is a vice that can make you perform better. But on balance, I think that there are some virtues that you can sub in that are also kind of performance enhancing. And so it's kind of like a balance of a lot of features of our character that, you know, would support a good life in general, and being a good member of a community and having a good, rich life also tend to support distance running.
Mm-hmm. Sabrina, I loved your book. And you spoke to this already, but your idea of perseverance or the ability to stay put to be better at running, it really resonated with me as an athlete and a coach. So do you find perseverance developed in your running spills over into other areas of your life, like maybe, you know, being a professor, parenting? I know you yourself have done some coaching with youth.
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot in our lives that's sort of against perseverance. I mean, just the kind of devices that we have that are always scattering our attention. I also think there's a kind of busyness or frenetic pace of life in our culture today that makes it hard to stay in place and remain on task and do one thing. I think running has really taught me, like formed me to be at peace more in those kinds of situations. Like, I think we can always think that, well, I should be doing this other thing, or having a hard time staying in place. And I think that training, running is really good practice in doing that. I mean, my job's as an academic, and so I spend a lot of time sitting alone, remaining on task in a different way, you know, in the library, like remaining on task in my papers. And so I think that academic practice has probably formed me in ways that support my running. But I think that the inverse is also true, like that having a daily practice of staying in place athletically has also informed the way that I show up in my classroom and I show up as an academic as well.
Mm-hmm. So how much thinking do you do while running? Like, do you feel your thinking serves as a distraction, and does thinking ever get in the way of your running? And I know that for me, if I'm kind of mulling over a dilemma or a situation, I'll think about it on my run. And then I come back, you know, 6 miles later, and I've barely strung together two thoughts in my brain while I've been out there other than, oh, that tree's pretty. Oh, those blossoms are so pretty, you know?
Yeah. I think it depends on the kind of running that I'm doing. Like sometimes I can get entire papers like written, you know, while I'm out there, just having that sort of like, I don't know, the pace of your mind changes and getting into that kind of flow state facilitates thinking in some ways. But then there are other runs where, I mean, certainly if they're higher intensity runs or if you are trying to execute some kind of purpose while you're running, like I need to do this interval and I need to be at this pace, something like that, mm-hmm. then I'm all in on that. On that task. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it probably varies, but I've heard, yeah, that same sort of thing. In fact, today, another academic, his name is Boomer. He's out of, I think, a school in Texas, but he sent me this article that was talking about how when you're running or doing some sort of like high intensity exercising, that it can turn off your executive function in certain ways. And so you're just, it's this kind of like, blanking out of like your thinking, your higher cognitive processes that can occur. And in that way, it's a sort of, it almost feels like you've had rest from having mm-hmm. to do that kind of critical assessment sorts of things, taking a break in that way.
I totally believe that. And thank you. It validates me coming back and feeling like I was a monkey yeah. that went out and just enjoyed the view and looked for bananas. So,
yes. So I really enjoyed the chapter in your book about emotions. And I know even for myself, when I go out for a run, sometimes I feel like I go through the full range of emotions out there. So why do you feel like a runner should care about emotions?
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, there's a phrase in running, emotions can cook your food or set your kitchen on fire. Like, sometimes your emotions are this great well of strength, like when you're very motivated or you're in love with what you're doing or you're just very driven, right? Emotions can really fuel your way to success. But I don't know if this is your experience, but I've set my kitchen on fire more races than I can count. Like, you know, you're just suddenly distracted by something that aggrieved you in another time, or, you know, like you miss a cup at when you're running in a marathon or something and you don't get your hydration and you feel more, you know, bothered by the fact that you didn't get the cup than the physical repercussions of actually missing the hydration. Like, I think those things happen all the time. Like, there are so many agitations. And so I think it's important to just recognize, what are emotions? What is our responsibility with respect to our emotions? Like, can we change them? What is our responsibility there? What does it look like to be an excellent person with respect to the kinds of emotional responses that you have to the world? And what do they teach us? Like, what kinds of feedback are they giving us about like our environment? Mm-hmm. And so it just bothers me to think of having these mysterious entities, like not knowing what emotions are and having them play such a substantial role in our running lives. Like, I think we've all had these experiences of emotions coloring our experiences. And so, yeah, in that chapter, I'm just trying to give people greater emotional literacy so they can navigate those spaces a little bit better.
Mm, awesome. Well, we're going to take a brief break to hear from some supporting sponsors. Please stay with us. Thanks to Curex for its continued support. For 15% off Curex insoles, visit Curex.com and use code AMR15. You know when you find an indispensable product and you suddenly want one for every room in your house? Dare I admit I'm that way about cheater glasses for reading? Well, Curex insoles are the athletic shoe equivalent. With Curex's patented dynamic arch technology, Curex insoles properly support the foot and its natural movement for ideal ankle, knee, and hip alignment. This means the kinetic chain up from feet to head functions like it should, helping me sidestep injury. That's why I have Curex Run Pro insoles in my running shoes, Curex Bike Pro insoles in my cycling shoes, and the all-new Curex Pickleball Pro insoles in my court shoes. I don't take an athletic step unless I'm supported by Curex insoles. They provide flexible support with an ideal level of rigidity. The list of sport-specific insoles Curex makes is long. In addition to the three I just mentioned, Curex makes insoles for hiking, walking, soccer, golf, tennis, hockey, skiing, and more, plus one specific for work shoes for on-your-feet-all-day occupations. Curex offers a full line of highly customized insoles available in high, medium, and low arch profiles. Feel the Curex difference and try Curex risk-free today. The company offers a 60-day warranty, even if the product has been cut to fit your shoes. Visit Curex.com and use code AMR15 for 15% off a pair of Curex insoles. That's Curex.com with code AMR15 for 15% off. Curex.com and that code AMR15. A lot of people think getting life insurance means you're insuring yourself for yourself, but it's actually the exact opposite. It's insuring yourself for your family. So if something happens to me and I'm not around anymore, I can have more peace of mind knowing my family and kids can have some financial support. And that's where Fabric by Gerber Life comes in. My husband and I kept putting off getting life insurance until my best friend's ex-husband died suddenly of a heart attack in his early 40s. Seeing how much life insurance would have helped his daughter prompted us to finally take action and get life insurance to take care of our kids. Fabric by Gerber Life is term life insurance you can get done right here, right now. You could be covered from your couch in under 10 minutes with no health exam required. If you've got kids, and especially if you're young and healthy, the time to lock in low rates is now. Fabric has flexible, high-quality policies that fit your family and your budget, like $1 million in coverage for less than a dollar a day. And Fabric has more than life insurance, free digital wills, investment accounts to invest in your kids' future, and more. You can manage it all right from your phone, so your family is prepared for anything. Join the thousands of parents who trust Fabric to protect their family. Apply today in just minutes at meetfabric.com/AMR. That's meetfabric.com/AMR. M-E-E-T fabric.com/AMR. Policies issued by Western Southern Life Assurance Company. Not available in certain states. Prices subject to underwriting and health questions. Sabrina, you wrote an article discussing how much a GPS watch during running can focus our attention on measuring and controlling versus appreciating and gratitude. So tell us more about that.
Yeah. In that article, I was thinking about, there's a Walker Percy essay. He's a writer. He writes a lot of really good novels, but also essays. And he writes about the loss of the creature, right? Like, we're not immediately experiencing the world around us. Instead, we're kind of being mediated by concepts and mediating by devices. And so I was just thinking about my experiences of runs and how sometimes I experience them through the lens of my devices, mm-hmm. right? So I've run the same stretch of ground so many times with a GPS watch that I know precisely how far it is. I know like what I should physiologically be experiencing at a given point, mm-hmm. Such that I cease to be fully present in runs. And so I've tried to move away from really just relying on my devices or thinking through the lens of my devices and making space for just being fully present and having gratitude in the moment and wondering about things. Cause I just don't think there are enough experiences in our lives like that, where we have this kind of childlike wonder and presence. Mm-hmm. And one way in which I've kind of been coming back around to looking for wonder again is just like being with my daughters on runs, because I'll have them in the stroller and they'll have this running commentary where they're just really taking in the environment and showing me again, like, oh, this is what running is. It's about experiencing and being present and enjoying the world.
Mm-hmm. So true. I read an interesting article you wrote about running and social media. What do you think the great philosophers would have to say about social media use and runners?
Yeah, that is so funny. I was talking to my students about this in a general way today. I was teaching Machiavelli, and Machiavelli is all about how reputation matters. It doesn't matter what kind of character you have, like good, bad, it doesn't matter insofar as people look on you and they're like, that's a pretty good guy. we can trust him to, you know, accomplish whatever ends. So I think depending on who you were reading, they would have different things to say. In general, I worry about social media insofar as it's a turning of attention to the way you seem instead of who you actually are, right? Mm. It's a focus on seeming over being, or reputation over substance. And I think that's a way of like not becoming substantial people, right? Because I'm answerable to the masses instead of to a few people who will my good. And also, like, it's not true to who you are, right? Like, you can create an entire story and image of yourself that shrinks, like, that doesn't adequately reflect, like, the person you actually are. I think it makes us people who are, it trains our attention to be people who are more focused on what we look like instead of what we actually do. And so I worry about that. I mean, in the running space, I think there's a lot of like performance stuff going on. Like, I've heard runners say things like, I'm finishing a race and thinking about what I'm going to write in my caption, which is like, oh my gosh, why are we doing this? But I also think I'm less worried about it in the running space, just insofar as like, I think going through the act of training and racing is a kind of refinement that maybe it's kind of like there's less of a worry here, because insofar as you participate in running, there's a refinement that comes alongside of it. So maybe we should be less worried than other kinds of activities in the world. But yeah, I mean, it is something that I think about, like even in terms of my own attention, like being on a professional running contract, for example, means you are not just an athlete, but you're also a marketer. You have to do this kind of self-marketing thing that I find really difficult and kind of like a balance in terms of where your attention should go.
Yeah, I hear that with a lot of professional athletes, that they struggle with having to be more than an athlete in that sense, but it's part of the job, like any job.
Right.
So your book dives into the intersection of suffering and running. Do you feel the ability to embrace suffering or remain in difficulty is important to reach your full running potential? And, you know, following that, why is suffering an important part of a happy life?
Yeah, those are such great questions. Yeah, I think so. Suffering is part of a good life. I think just intuitively, like if you ask, if you ask someone who's recently climbed a mountain or something like that, like there's a fair amount of suffering involved. And then, but we'll say that's one of the most meaningful things that I did, or raising children. I mean, there are so many frowns involved. there's a lot of suffering. And I think if our lives were structured just in terms of like minimizing suffering and maximizing pleasure or something like that, then you probably wouldn't have children, right? You might not even have friends, because I mean, friends add pleasure, but also like it can be stressful to bear another person's burdens or something like that. Mm-hmm. And marathoning, I mean, I was recently watching the marathon that comes through Newport News, which is where I'm living. And I was out there cheering for a couple of my students who were participating. And marathons are a frown parade. Like very few people are like out there really smiling. Like it's always the exception when you see someone who has that smile on. And so we know this like intuitively, I think, as runners, that a lot of the richest experiences, like a really good life, is often constituted by difficulty. And those difficulties, those kinds of suffering, can be edifying, right? If they're toward good ends. But I think one thing that makes me in general uncomfortable in the endurance / fitness world broadly is when we're not careful about the way in which we're suffering. Because I think there is a culture around saying things like no pain, no gain, or pain is weakness leaving the body, or just celebrating that kind of, you know, like bravado in running through injury and things like that. And mm-hmm. And those are not productive, like they're kind of imprudent sort of costs that you're making your body bear. Mm-hmm. So I think it's the case that suffering plays a role in a human life. It's like part of, I mean, the body grows and changes through strain. And so mm-hmm. does our character. Like being in adverse circumstances can make you more resilient and more humble and so forth. Like that is a really important part of a good life. But also, pain for its own sake is not going to do anyone any good.
Yeah, you touched on something we were going to ask you about anyway. Do you feel that the sport of ultra running at its highest level focuses too much on suffering versus other areas of character that might be developed?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I mean, it's certainly the case that once you get to domains in which there's a really kind of outsized love of like running, there are probably higher doses of suffering involved. Mm. But sometimes, but I've met people who really have a like well-ordered sense of like where suffering fits in their own lives. You know what I mean? Like, I think there are some really good examples of athletes in this space who do honor their bodies and do take rest really well and have a sort of long view of their sustainability. And so it's hard to say like that definitely ultra running is subject to this kind of distortion toward mm-hmm. thinking about suffering. I see it actually more so in like fitness media really mm-hmm. than I do in ultra running. Like if I think about my peers, like in the professional space in ultra running, I think there's a greater sense and literacy about human limits. Whereas in fitness culture, I see just kind of more of the bravado culture and willing to step on your body. Because if you want to last a long time in sports, I think you have to become aware of like, what is the training that I can absorb? Mm-hmm. What can I do long term? Because careers are built on consistently stacking seasons instead of just overstepping your limits and breaking every chance you get.
Mm-hmm. That's a great segue into what I was going to ask you about next. And your book made me think a lot, but I think the part that made me think the most was when you talked about why limits matter and how it's so prevalent out there where people talk about no limits or surpassing their limits without instead focusing on how to live a rich life and run beautiful races within the limitations we have. So why do you feel it's important to work within our constraints and limits?
Yeah, honestly, I probably like at this point of my career where I have children now, I think like certain ways in which I'm limited have become more salient to me. And so that's, I mean, I was writing that chapter with a newborn on my lap with a toddler in the other room. And so thinking about my limits. Yeah, I think oftentimes the way that we think about limits in the sport are physical limits. And what we say in thinking like I'm limitless, like what we're saying is like my potential is probably higher, you know, and so I don't want to put a cap on that. Mm. But we don't just have physical limits. Like we have cultural limits. Like we have people in our lives and we don't want to step over them for the sake of accomplishing some sort of athletic goal. We also have moral limits, right? There are certain things that I am not willing to do in order to maximize my performances. Like I don't want to cheat. Like I don't want to take advantage of competitors or mislead people. Like there are certain ways I'm not going to occupy the sport to get faster. And so just being aware of the ways in which you're limited and then maybe looking happily on those limits, right? Like some of my limits are the students that I have, right? And I want to honor them and not step on that limit. Like, or I don't want to put in extra training and thereby transgress on my family. Like I want to honor them and occupy the limits that I have in an excellent way and have integrity with respect to them. I think the reason why this is not it's not like on the back of t-shirts or something like, you know, occupy your limits with integrity. Like I think it's,
we're going to have to workshop
Get that made, Sabrina. Get that made.
I think it's more popular to say like, you know, you can do more, which is probably true. Like you can't, like you can probably get more out of yourself physically, but also like there are ways in which I don't want to optimize in terms of performance if it means stepping over people in my life or stepping over the moral limits that I have. So yeah, just becoming more mindful of those things.
Yeah, I think it can be perceived as giving yourself a pass or letting yourself off the hook to be like, well, my kids got sick during that training cycle, and then my husband got deployed and all that stuff. And it's like, those are real. Those are limitations that can make it so you don't have the outcome that you dream of, but it doesn't mean you shouldn't feel proud of what you accomplished in that cycle.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. That's kind of like an explanation, but not necessarily an excuse. Mm-hmm, yeah.
Mm-hmm, yeah. So your book closes with a story on how, when you first started running, you used to wait for a glorious day when racing hard wouldn't hurt anymore. And when you would become so strong and well-trained that fast would feel easy, you then go on to say that you're still waiting. So how can philosophy help us understand how discomfort is a part of the process?
Yeah, I don't know if you had a similar experience. I would just see more mature runners running by and it looked so effortless, right? Mm-hmm. But I mean, they're going faster, but it's not as though it ceases to be difficult. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think this is just kind of continuous with what we said previously in terms of a good life and being edified and, like living an embodied life is going to come with certain discomforts. And that doesn't mean that that's not something that you should do. Right. Mm-hmm. I think that you can rise to those difficulties and meet them with grace. I think you can be humbled through the kinds of difficulties that you work through athletically, and you can use them as an opportunity to grow in hopes, right? And grow in resilience and become more patient. I think that kind of learning process is so much a part of our education as human beings. And it's one thing, like, I think that's it makes athletics a really unique space to be refined in your character, because it's one thing if I were just to tell students or something like the definition of patience or what perseverance is. It's one thing to learn that word while you're sitting comfortably in a chair. It's another thing to feel it in your lungs and in your heart and your legs want to give out and to experience what excellence actually is. Mm-hmm. In running, you can kind of experience that strain and recognize what it means to persevere.
Whenever I watch reality TV and you know, they're there on Survivor or The Amazing Race, whatever, and they're like, oh, this is the hardest thing I've ever done. It's like, well, of course it is. Like, we have a society built on comfort. And, and it's like, yes, yeah, so going an entire day only eating a grub, yes, that is not something we encounter in everyday life. And maybe it's harder than going to the supermarket. But yeah.
For sure. Actually, I recently challenged some of my students to take a break from social media for, it was like 3 days, just don't go on social media for 3 days. And then I gave them a bonus point on their exam if they did it, because I care about their formation. And a couple of them came in and they said, that was the hardest thing I've ever done. And I was like, what?
Scary.
We need to take away your shoes, boy, and make you go walk on some uneven terrain.
Sabrina, you alluded to this already, that you wrote the book while having, whether it was a toddler or a baby in your lap. How do you think your book would have been different if you had written it before kids or more at the peak of your high performance running career?
Yeah, I do think it would be different. I mean, I think throughout my running career, I cared about virtue and I cared about using athletics kind of as a laboratory to work on your character and be refined in certain ways. But if I'm being honest, like, I didn't think of the many excellent ways that you can inhabit the sport. I mean, I kind of, when you're on a professional running contract, your habits of attention are fixed on certain things. And one of those things is like high performance. And so I think those things would have really shown through in the book, right? Thinking about striving, thinking about high performance and where character fits in, certain ways in which character is undermined in your striving. Like, I think I would have written about those things. Mm-hmm. But the final two chapters of the book, which I think are probably the most important chapters in the book, when I'm talking about what a happy life consists of or the many ways in which you can have integrity in the practice as an athlete and also have higher allegiances in place or more substantial commitments. I don't think I would have had the same kind of vision for what those kinds of things could look like without those limits in my life. And it was kind of like a transitional year when I was writing it. I mean, this past year is the first year that I haven't had a running contract since I was like 22. So it's like a completely different way of inhabiting the sport. I'm thinking about motivation in a different way, like different ways to write what animates your running. Why do you get out the door on a daily basis? Why is habit important? And I think those answers, those questions were answered for me when I was running as part of my profession. And now I'm having to look at it, look at the sport, occupy the sport in a different way that makes sense for the kind of ways that I'm participating now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, this has been a fascinating conversation, Sabrina. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. You asked great questions.
Oh, good. I admit it was all Liz. Usually I do all the questions. Oh, I'm like, you. Liz, can you send me some questions? So yay for Liz.
I have one more question. I have one more question.
Oh, all right. Yeah. Okay.
Sabrina, who's your favorite philosopher?
Oh my gosh. Well, Aristotle. I think, yeah. I mean, we even, like, Aristotle had this school called the Lyceum, and we call our house the Lyceum because we just love Aristotle so much around here.
Just in case people didn't know that you're a big nerd, Sabrina, thank you for cementing that.
Oh, no.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Thank you, Sabrina. Take good care.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye. Liz, thank you so much for recommending her as a guest.
She's very intellectual, but hopefully everyone took away one thing to think about on their next run.
Mm-hmm. If they can hold that executive function. Yes.
We know you can't. You admit right. It as much.
Fail.
Look,
summer school, here I come.
Found change.
That's what's really getting my attention. You bet. All right. Well, if you want to share laughs like this and more, join us at our Lake Placid retreat, September 6 to 9. And Lake Placid, if you don't know it, is a two-time host of the Winter Olympics. So the town, the charming, charming town in the Adirondacks, is just steeped in history, Olympic history and lore. And it's beautiful. As I said, it's in the Adirondacks, so it's surrounded by peaks and forests, and there is a lake there in town. So we're going to convene, as I said, from September 6th to 9th. We run together. We bring in expert speakers. Like, there's going to be a self-defense for runners session. We're going to go swimming in Mirror Lake, which is a boat-free lake right there in the middle of town, adjacent to our host hotel. So it's just going to be a fantastic time. And it's going to be, the summer crowds will have thinned out, but it'll still be warm enough to enjoy time outside with friends old and new. So please join us. Go to anothermotherrunner.com, click on events to find all the details and to register. Again, anothermotherrunner.com. Our podcast today was produced in St. Paul, Minnesota by Barry Medora from Fire on the Bluff.
Yeah, your parents' idiosyncrasies become crystal clear once you yourself are a parent.
Oh, yeah.
You realize they weren't crazy. They just had kids.
Yes. So, oh my gosh, my poor parents' house was broken into, I think it was twice, maybe three times. And like definitely sterling silver was stolen and like my mother's engagement ring and some other jewelry. Yeah, it was sad. My mother was really devastated. And she was also really mad because they took the woven baskets that she used for garbage like little garbage receptacles in different rooms. She's like, they stole my baskets.
I'm like, okay, wait a minute.
They were antique wicker. That's why she was so upset.
What an odd thing though. What an odd thing to steal. Like, well, you know, they're just rummaging through the house and they're like, yeah, no, grab those.
Well, my mother's theory was that they use it to carry the loot. So that, you know, which I'm sorry, if you're a burglar, don't you show up with, you know, pillowcases or other types of, you know, I don't know, hockey bags to take stuff out in?
Yeah. Who knows?